Hello again, friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Balticon 47 Wrap-Up. I'm your host, Doc Coleman. This week, Swimming Cat Studios is proud to bring you a panel that looks back over the history of the epic BBC science fiction serial, Doctor Who. The panel is titled Growing Up Who, and it was recorded on Friday, May 24th at 11 p.m. Our panel was moderated by Jacqueline Stanley, a.k.a. Lady Ozma, with panelists Caramon Stanley, Larry Reclusado, and myself. Growing Up Who takes a look at what it was like for each of us to grow up watching Doctor Who, both the classic series for most of the panelists and the new series for Caramon. We look at the ways the series influenced our outlooks on life and how those changes have shaped our lives, past and present. And we also discuss how the series itself has changed over time. We hope you like the discussion. Enjoy!
All right, well, it's 11 o'clock, so I say we start. Are we all here? I don't know who else is on here.
Yeah, it's all four of us.
Okay, the four of us? Great. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Well, I thought we could introduce ourselves, so...
You only say this because you don't know who we are.
I don't know who
you are. They know who you are?
Well, that's true.
I think I'm the 15th incarnation of the Doctor. Oh, no, wait.
Let's try. Now, see, because I thought that you were the Master, but, you know.
Well, it does.
You know, you get the beard going. So, well, why don't we start down here on the end with Larry and...
I'm Larry Reclusado. I do a independent cable access show. Was called the Nova Comic Book Show. It's now being called Supernova because it's covering more than just comics.
Hi there. I'm Doc Coleman. I am a writer, a podcaster, a voice actor, and I've been a fan of Doctor Who since I first stumbled across it on late-night television back in the late 70s.
I'm Caramon Stanley. No one of consequence. I've been watching Doctor Who since I was a wee little lad.
Mostly because he doesn't know anybody in his family who likes Doctor Who. I'm Jacqueline, otherwise known as Lady Ozma. This is my son. So he is a multi-generation Who family. Anyways, I am the moderator, and these are our great panelists, and we are going to talk about growing up Who. And we'll wait for the door to close, just because it's noisy. Hi, greetings. Come to the front. We do not exterminate. We also do not upgrade.
We do not upgrade, yeah.
We also do not upgrade.
Can I upgrade my eyes anyway?
I can upgrade your eyes later. Okay, so when was the first time? I know we heard from three of us, but when was the first time that you watched Doctor Who?
That's actually a hard memory to go by, because I've got two memories, one with Jon Pertwee, where I think I just ran into it on PBS when I was like 9, but I really started watching it Tom Baker when I was 12. So, and yeah, if you want to ask, I'm going to say, I do have a favorite Doctor, and it's always going to be Tom.
All right, so let's just get ask the audience, how many of you watched Doctor Who as kids? All right, most of you. So many of us have grown up Who. So one of the first questions I'd like is, how do you think that Who has affected you in your growing years? Or in the case of the young man in his current years?
Well, the immediate thing is that my nickname is Doc. in some ways... That came from a couple different influences, but one reason I've held on to the nickname so long is because after a while, people start calling me the Doctor. It's like, yes, okay, I can go with that.
I'd say a lot of it is just the fact that Doctor Who really shows you the human potential with his companions and such. And throughout my life, I've kind of used that whenever I've been in serious situations, Having been a Marine, things like that, during what some people don't know as very much, but I was actually in the Marine Corps during Beirut. And it was just the fact that I knew I could get over this. And it really came to me because as a child, I didn't have that much support from my family. So.
Let's see. First one is that if you're ever in a situation, you just run. Kind of that. You don't have to check under your bed for monsters because most of them just light up anyway. So, I mean, you know, that's cool. And even the stairs aren't safe anymore.
I guess another one that I should throw out is one of the things I love about Doctor Who is that it very much proves that you don't have to follow the conventional approach. In fact, if you look at most of the episodes, the conventional approach caused the problem. In order to solve it, you have to be unconventional. And that's okay. No matter what kind of pressures society puts on you to conform, it's okay to be yourself, no matter how different that is.
All right, well, now some of us have been watching Who for a very long time. Some of us for all of our lives. But how do you think that, have you seen the Doctor grow up with you? Like, do you feel like he has grown and changed? Like, how do you see that? And then you think about yourself.
He's always a kid. He's always going to be a kid at heart. But I feel that he has grown up. I think that every companion helps him realize different aspects of himself. As well as, just as he goes through the years and sees different parts of humanity, I feel that also changes him in different ways.
Actually, I find it interesting that as the Doctor gets older, that the actors playing him get younger.
Definitely.
Except in the case of Sylvester.
True. But it's interesting to watch that progression through the incarnations.
That's a function of the regeneration.
Well, by the time we get to the 13th Doctor, it'll be a 12-year-old playing him.
But one of the interesting things is that the actors do a really good job of, or the most recent actors have done a really good job of portraying that the careworn type thing. The whole, as much as they try to be young and energetic, they also portray a feeling of the years. I mean, if you look at Tom Baker, mm-hmm. you know, he's talking about he's 400 years old and he's not even middle-aged yet.
Actually, Experiment of Mars, he says he's 724.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I knew I couldn't remember the number accurately, so I just threw out one that seemed about right.
But one of the Troutons episode, because I saw it like 2 weeks ago, I can't remember. Several exactly thousands. It was like 472 at that point, though.
Yeah.
Well, Planet of the Daleks, he says several thousands, if memory serves.
The doctor lies.
Yes,
the doctor lies.
He lies about his grades.
There was one.
A master had a better grade than he did at school.
Well, everyone mm-hmm.
mentioned that with Pertwee, and he was. But I was a late boomer.
Failed out. He came back again.
Well, I'd say you get different things from each doctor, and each one grows in different ways. I mean, like when they brought him back, you had Eccleston, who basically, you had the warrior coming back from war.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw that in the way he was pulling away from everybody. But then, when Tennant comes along, he's like, okay, now I can actually get past my post-traumatic stress disorder.
And then he couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. Until Donna came along, where mm-hmm. he needed a best friend. So, it all works. And that's just for the new stuff. The old stuff, I mean, we start with the professor, and then we get the comedian. So, you know, it's just where you're growing in your stages of life, just like anyone else. You're going to have times when you're the comedian. You're going to have times when you're the fool. Mm-hmm. You're going to have times when you're basically the investigator, the detective, which is, of course, Peter.
And then you're going to have times when you're the asshole.
Right.
Which is Colin Baker.
Yeah.
So. I think he was going to throw a nervous breakdown, to be honest.
I blame all that on the producers.
Trying too hard.
Well, you know.
Trying to kill the
show. With that whole court thing. I mean, that would stress anybody out,
yeah.
Right?
So.
It's the screams that Mel gave that drove him over the edge.
Really, they nearly drove me over the edge, so...
Why did you have to remind me?
Either Mel or Perry that drove him bad.
we have a question from the audience.
Yes.
When do you suppose we'll be talking about the aliens and creatures that the Doctor sometimes fights off and how we can relate to them?
Well, there is a great panel about the favorite villains... tomorrow at 7 p.m. that I would recommend. That would definitely talk about some of those aliens.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure we'll cover a few here.
I'm sure we'll cover a few here as well.
Like the Master's already come up.
Yeah, the Master's already come up. And so, yeah.
And then there are definitely some interesting things about some of the, not so much the villains as the alien races that are presented on Doctor Who, which initially it looks like they're the problem. And as the story progresses, it turns out they're just people who are a little bit different, and they're as much victims of what's going on as anybody else, and it's somebody else who's actually pulling the strings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real good lesson that people that seem different from you may actually be a lot like you, and they may not be intending to cause you problems. It just may be a misunderstanding. But
well, I mean, realistically, Doctor Who is rarely flip the monster paradigm on its head. I mean, you've got the Solarians, which is constantly the same plot over and over again, but it's a good plot, so we don't really mind. You've got the Ice Warriors and Peladon. The second Peladon. And that's, like, almost it for instances where the monsters actually end up being not monster. And the Cold War, recently. That was a little bit gray. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure entirely if I agree with this whole monsters are the victims too in this respect. Hmm? Yeah, well, there's a difference I think between monster and alien.
Yeah, there is.
Solarians in particular. I mentioned them. They were first cast. Often their first casting defines virtually everything about how they're portrayed in the future, which is, in my opinion, kind of a shame. But, yeah, with the Solarians, they were cast as a very human-esque but intense in their racial patriotism, almost.
But if you say the humans basically be a little more than slightly more evolved slaves.
And, well, food as well, technically. And, well, although I don't know if that was... I listen to Big Finish audio. Sometimes I mix canon.
So Larry's worried about using viral bacterial warfare to get rid of what they thought were the invaders on their world. They actually thought they were there to begin with.
Well, what I'm saying is, we, like, never see any expansion of the Daleks, for example. Like, even in the episode Dalek, it's just a... I've listened to Jubilee recently,
mm-hmm.
So I cannot listen to Dalek. I cannot watch Dalek. Not compare it to the significantly better job they did portraying a sympathetic Dalek in Jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the Daleks in the show, which are just ever since Dalek Invasion of Earth, have been just caricatures and flat, boring characters, almost.
Well, if you think of the Draconians...
I love the Draconians. And the
Draconians are usually, in the episode, they're usually initially put forward as
well,
being the aggressors.
They're only in Frontier and Space.
Costuming is too hard to keep doing.
Mm-hmm. I can believe that.
The Ogrons popped up a couple episodes.
Well, yeah, the Ogrons are all over the place.
Mm-hmm. They wanted more of the country wanted more of the Draconians. He liked the characterizations, as you were going to bring up. He liked the hat and the mask designs, and he liked how the actors, how the characters were written. I think he wanted to portray them as being slightly Shakespearean.
He described them as being very Japanese, which I can see a little bit, if you're taking the 70s caricature of Japan. But, yeah, the side of the... that episode, Frontier in Space, that serial, was actually very nastily received by the public, by the fan base, for being too Star Trek at the time. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a question. When some of us were growing up, Doctor Who was not quite as mainstream as it is today.
Yeah.
So one of our panelists is probably going to have a very different experience in that than the other three of us. But how did you incorporate that into your person, this fandom that, I mean, how many people that you knew were fans of Doctor Who when you were growing up?
Yeah, like anybody who watched PBS and 12 years old.
I did!
Especially in the 70s. Now, it was rare to find somebody who actually did. And usually if you did, they were also going to be the comic book geek at school along with you and so forth and so on. So, yeah, and there wasn't really fandom except for Star Trek at that point. Because that's...
So how did you... I mean, were you the secret guy in the basement, or were you the, like, did you incorporate that into your life and then have to explain it to people?
Well, thing is, I would always have, you know, comics and so on, but I also was, you know, I grew up a little different than a lot of people, and I grew up in a neighborhood that was very mixed race. When somebody did actually, you know, decide they were going to pick a fight with me, it was, okay, I'm going to avoid this. And then you found out that I was the child of a martial artist who'd been training since he was four. So, you know, that's, and then I would turn people onto it. And it's like, you know, hey, go read this from the Marvel comic of Doctor Who. And they're like, hey, that's pretty cool. Where can I, well, okay, look, 7 o'clock Saturday night, channel 10. Check it out. You'll like it.
He was preaching the Doctor Who faith.
Yeah.
He was like a Doctor Who missionary in the 70s.
You know, it was just like, you're going to like it. You're actually going to find you like this. And let's face it, with Lele in it, prepubescent teenage boys. Yeah.
I had the same experience with Target novels. I would read them at school, and other kids would see the covers, which were so cool looking. And they'd say, what is that? And say, well, you'll have to tape it because it's on at midnight. But
yeah.
What about you, Doc?
I didn't have that experience.
Who's the reason I bought a VCR?
Isn't that the reason a lot of people bought VCRs back then? They weren't cheap.
Until the DVD era, we should have the world's largest collection of Doctor Who on videotape collection. I mean, I think I have every episode.
I still have one of those.
But I know.
I'm on beta.
We had them on beta in my house, so.
Find a beta that's under $1,000 to play them.
No, I know that when I was growing up, basically I always felt like there are a lot of things that I was into that nobody else around me understood. If I actually found somebody else who knew what Doctor Who was, it was like, dear God, I'm not alone. And that's kind of the ridiculous thing, because when Doctor Who was only aired on PBS stations, every few months, you know, it would be interminable trying to get to the Doctor Who episode because they'd be doing fundraising.
Oh, God.
And Doctor Who was always one of their, you know, Doctor Who was the show that was so popular, they used it to fund just about everything else on the station.
They did.
Mm-hmm. So,
and
you know.
And they went longer on their breaks.
Yes, much longer.
Else.
You know, first off, you go to tune into Doctor Who, and it's already a half hour late because they're still finishing up the previous special program that they're fundraising. They finally switch into Doctor Who, and, you know, they've taken one of the longer episodes out of order of what they have been showing so they can stretch out the telethon. They're doing longer breaks, and it's like, and because and that was in a time we usually didn't have videotape recorders, so you're either staying up all night to watch the episode, or if you were lucky enough to have a videotape recorder, you're watching it like the following weekend and finding out I only have half the episode because they took what's normally a 2 hour slot and they stretched it out to 4 hours.
I remember when they broadcast Terribly Off on Twilight in color. Mm-hmm. It was episodic. every half hour. Mm-hmm. They would go on for a 45-minute break.
See, fortunately,
hammer to my VCR.
Fortunately, my PBS station, they did it 90 minutes. If they were doing their telethon, they would start it a little early, do a break right in the middle, and then finish it. So I was lucky enough not to have to really put up with it.
Well, and then the terror is when they pull up something like the Warlords for 3 days.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, let's hear from our young guy who didn't get to experience that.
Lucky
one. Yeah, I know. Lucky one.
Well, I've been going to conventions for most of my
life. He doesn't watch
with commercials. He doesn't watch with commercials.
I don't watch with
either.
Commercials.
We have DVRs. Who watches with commercials?
We has Netflix.
Yeah, we have Netflix. Yeah. We have...
Or it's on disc.
Yeah, we have iTunes.
How do you think I got caught up when she left me behind? I was like, what? I missed a whole doctor? And it wasn't like it was just like...
Okay, so now you get the angst. There we go.
It was like she skipped Tenet. And I was like, what freak? There's like three seasons in a mini season.
How could I wait for this guy like months to watch the Tenet episodes? Not happening. And you watch those as soon as they came on, you're like,
even Colin Beck cannot be terrible.
You just can't wait to watch Tenet.
Okay, I will say something about Colin Baker. I'm going to say something about, at that time, the producer of Doctor Who was trying to kill the show, and...
He was
the right actor to do it.
And the thing is, Colin is a much better actor, and if you ever get to see The Stranger, watch it.
I'd also like to say, well, first, his Big Finish is incredible. In John Nathan Turner's defense, which is a saying you don't hear much, which I think is a shame. Season 18, incredible. Yes. Season 20, incredible. Seasons 25 and 26, no one ever complains about those. No one ever complains about these. Mm-hmm. He made some missteps with Mel and with Perry, but that's all what people remember him for. I personally even like Colin Baker's Doctor in the television show. Have you seen Mind Warp?
I actually like Colin Baker as well. I do think that Colin Baker got a little bit gypped because he had some...
He suffered from a Pippin Jane Baker syndrome.
Well, he had... He didn't have the greatest scripts, and he had that long arc of the trial, and it was just really his...
And the producer did say at one point he wanted to end the show.
Well,
And Colin was very badly treated.
He wanted to hand it off to someone, and
nobody would take it.
They said specifically, if you quit, we will kill it. And he grew up with Doctor Who. He worked on Doctor Who. He met his partner working on Doctor Who.
Well, they had a whole bunch of people in the BBC itself.
Well, Michael Graves...
Who wanted to kill Doctor Who. They thought there was no place for it in their lineup. And they were just trying to find a reason. Nathan Turner was like, oh, please, no,
and
I don't want to lose my job.
Before Colin Baker was forced to quit, not many people know this part of the story, but Colin Baker had recently broken up with his wife. Mm-hmm. They split up. His wife was Michael Graves, the head of the BBC's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then Michael Graves came to someone, and someone later reported this, that said Michael Graves said he did not want Colin Baker working for the BBC under any condition. So let's not hate on Colin Baker, or even John Nathan Turner in this case.
Well, actually, I don't really hate on Colin Baker. I have to admit, I dislike some of his interpretation of the Doctor, but he does bring some interesting things to the Doctor that you didn't see before.
Mm-hmm.
You got to see the Doctor as someone who is sometimes angry and sometimes irrational and makes brash decisions without realizing the consequences. And that was actually something that was important to bring to the Doctor at some point.
Doctor tried to smash a caveman's head in with a rock.
But that's also...
Yeah. But how many years? How many years ago was that before that? For those of us who...
And mostly nine. That was his series.
Yeah, but this is important. All right, well, I have a question. Mostly for Larry and Doc, because poor Cameron here... Because poor Cameron here never had to experience Doctor Who on PBS. I just have to ask, how much of that PBS swag for fundraisers that they pimped for Doctor Who did you guys get? Because my house was full of it.
I grew up on welfare. No. ain't getting this stuff.
Absolutely none of it. I was either a student living at home, I was a student at college, or I was... starting off in work. I never had the money to donate any of that kind of stuff.
See, I was lucky because my parents Like, I mean, that was our family. That was what we did every week, was we sat down to watch Doctor Who on PBS. And, man, they get those fundraisers out. And my mom's like, what's the thing that will get me the most of that Doctor Who stuff? So we had it all. We had the mug that would have the Doctor Who logo appear when you put something hot in it. We got the pattern for the scarf. We got a tote bag. We got buttons. We got books. Like, we have a whole book about all the...
I got most of the stuff when I started working, when I had my job at Jeffy's.
So I thought...
I did have my aunt knit me the scarf. So
my mom actually still has all of this stuff that she got from PBS. And actually, because we were such good supporters of PBS, when they canceled Doctor Who and we stopped donating, they would call us and they were like, why aren't you donating anymore? And she would just go, are you getting Doctor Who back? And they were like, no.
Then collect.
She goes,
there's your
aunt. You're not getting any money. So
except
I just had to ask, because I was just wondering if you had a house full of...
BBC pulled the distribution rights after a while.
Honestly,
most of the Doctor Who swag that I've got now is stuff that's appeared since the new season started. You know, getting fun t-shirt designs that actually appear.
There's a kind of question for how much you can spend to keep your inner child happy. None of the stuff existed then.
$80 official BBC replica.
I have
fourth Doctor scarf.
Okay, mine was knit from the official BBC pattern. So
you win.
I actually have a friend
it's
who
not
has
the proper Doctor Who scarf. Somebody you know did it.
I have a friend who has a 10x20 storage unit. His wife made him get
for all his Doctor Who stuff.
And now he's having to sell some of it.
My greatest joy is I got a hold of the Doctor Who technical manual.
Nice.
It was still a PBS. A couple years later, I got actually in hardback as well.
All right, so what would be the Doctor Who moment that, as a kid, you were like, man, I wish I could do that? What was...
Oh, that's a good one.
Sonic screwdriver.
Yeah, these guys, I keep asking my kids, build me a sonic screwdriver, and they just keep refusing.
I was designing a sonic cane for you, but then
I should have brought mine.
Third Doctor?
I left 10 zip in my room. There's 10.
Thank you.
All right. Sonic screwdriver is up.
Okay. What doctors do we have represented? I got 3.
I got 11.
And we have 9 and 10.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
I feel unprepared. I sure brought mine.
That's actually hard. Oh, yeah.
Jameson's the same as Baker's.
I've got the poster on those days.
The Key of Time episodes. Just that whole run. I wanted to be in that adventure.
That was a great adventure.
Mm-hmm. Wait, I know that one.
You've seen some of them. I think you've seen about half of them.
Half of them?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen. There's a couple that I don't see. But...
Oh, nice choice.
Talents of one KA.
Oh, God.
Why?
Sorry, but
I got to ask why.
Ourself, I also grew up loving Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
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 It's basically the Doctor is.
It's Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock
yeah.
Holmes.
You could not, the melding of right there is so perfect. One of those rare ones where everything just clicked perfectly.
I gotta admit, it's one of my favorite episodes.
The BBC's habit for making what was the costume dramas. You can see the thing went all out on that episode. Everything was almost just you can't find a fault with it.
Well, they had all the wardrobe already for everything else.
What do they call it? Seaman shows, or I forget what the hell you need to call that.
The funny part
about you guys loving that one so much, I was so on it. He almost never worked for the Doctor Who show. The other reason was Leela. She was dealing with Victorian England.
Yeah.
Which is classic.
Yeah.
Worth it.
Yeah.
Classic.
The two extras were just Jago and Lightfoot were just incredible. That's
true.
People.
Incredibly great characters.
And they've now got their own audio stuff series.
All right, so
the story is Robert Holmes's goodbye to being Doctor Who's co-showrunner. It says a lot. Mm-hmm. He picks like the most notable public domain story that he can have his hands on and really runs with it.
Yep.
I just want to play 9.
Me too.
Yeah.
What about you, Caramon? All this time to think, and you're still thinking?
Hmm.
Did I ask you the secret of life?
Wow.
So I guess part of it is the desire to be like the doctor and always have the answer to a particular question that comes
Definitely.
Up to you.
Definitely.
Even if it's wrong.
Even if it's wrong.
The silence.
The silence.
Those guys were like Slendermen. I would have loved that.
Do I need to put a hash mark on your arm?
Yes.
When I was little, the character I identified with was actually, a lot of people probably grown. It was actually not the doctor. It was Tegan Jovanka.
Okay.
Jovanka. I freaking loved her. My first two episodes were Castor Valvel 1 and 2.
Okay.
And then they decided to show Rivos 1 and 2, and I was so confused.
Although switching between an Australian accent and a Southern English accent.
I wanted to be Tegan. I wanted to be all brash and upstart and didn't take no shit. And I love Tegan.
Which is a good segue into the next question. Which was the companion you hated the most because you wanted to be them? Who did you want to be? Who did you think was that, just that awesome
hated
movie?
Because
you wanted to be them. Who did you want to be them? And so you were just jealous that they got to be with the doctor and you could not be them because they were just that awesome and their shows were that awesome.
I feel like I have very few to choose.
I just wanted the TARDIS to show up in my front yard so I could be the companion. That'd be one.
There we go. That's a good one.
I think that's all of them.
But go with him.
Yeah, you can tell the moderate Who fans and the true Who fans from the non Who fans because when you say, okay, a big blue box appears in your yard. Guy opens the door and says, run. What do you do?
Run!
No, I push him back in the damn thing and pull the
TARDIS!
I watch which way he runs.
That's a good idea.
Another thing is Zoe.
Zoe's good.
Zoe's all, and you get to travel around with Fraser Hines and Jamie. Freaking Jamie McCrimmon.
Yeah, I just say I'm
a Jane.
Okay.
Totally Sarah Jane.
I will fully admit I like Sarah Jane because she was a journalist, and I studied journalism partially because I wanted to be Sarah Jane and partially because I wanted to be Lois Lane.
Now, of course, because we're guys, we don't want to be the girls. But
yeah, I was going to say, I love Sarah Jane as a companion, but I would not want to be her.
Brigadier.
But Harry Sullivan is one of the ones that's like, if I had to step into another companion's skin, I would... Yeah. You know, it would be Harry. I love some of the Harry and Sarah episodes, but
he's
a bit dim. It's like, I could do this better. Come on.
He's the anti-Ian.
He is?
Yes, in some ways.
Right. But yeah, the Brigadier has to be it for me. If I'm gonna...
He's the Brigadier.
He does a bit.
But he got into enough scrapes with the doctor.
Yes.
He didn't need to travel.
It was Bessie.
The Three Doctors, one of my favorites. Brigadier in trouble.
Yep. Then the doctor's like, oh, you're in trouble again, eh? All right, let's just...
Can't you handle anything without me?
No holds barred. Actors being dead does not matter. Which companion would you like to see brought back?
Leela? I'm sorry, just that savage attitude.
She was fun.
Leela was fun because she was the first companion to really basically say, I'm not running, I'm going to try and kill and skin it and map it on my wall.
And she's the first one to save the doctor.
She used to walk around with an instant kill poison. And he kept telling her, leave it at home. That was more dangerous than what's your name is Nitro 9.
Ace. I did like Ace's Nitro 9, the hairspray can of doom. In every episode, no, Professor, I don't have my Nitro 9. And he's like, pull the Nitro 9 out of your bag that I know you really have, and then set it off.
But the timers are working much better now.
Every episode.
My favorite Leela bit is definitely an invasion of time. And one vulnerability, this little hole in the back of the neck. Oh, is that all?
That was a prodigious throw.
Leela has this god of curiosity.
I may have missed something, but at least as of a few years ago, there was still a chance we could bring Susan back. So you're still semi-active.
Well, they might actually bring Leela back. She was told to keep her schedule open for the 50th film.
Yep.
Yeah.
A lot of more ass that way, except for Eccleston, who said flatly, no.
And the actress who played Susan canceled the convention appearance.
Did she really?
Because she had... Yeah,
ooh, intriguing. Maybe we can find out if she's really the doctor's granddaughter or not.
Of course she is.
Well, no, remember the last time the doctor saw her getting into the compartment.
That doesn't prove that she's his granddaughter.
That just proves she was a girlfriend.
The doctor lies.
The doctor lies.
That she's his granddaughter. I'm on the side that she is his granddaughter.
Yeah.
But he also say that he was married before it, so...
He's mentioned his granddaughter a few times, in fact.
Yes.
When he first took, there's a blank, you know what I mean? Now, the Duke of Pay into that planet. He brought his granddaughter there, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's just... If you were filming the 50th anniversary episode, all rumors aside, dead people, you can rise them, whatever. Like, who would you...
For I mean, Sarah Jane is my favorite of all the companions. I'd love to be able to raise Elizabeth Sladen from the dead and make her nice and healthy and have
not
her,
a zombie eating.
Yes, and have her be...
That'd be a great plot.
That would be such a great plot.
On the show again for a while. That's it. Now, but another companion that I would love to see brought back, even if it was with a different talent, would be Romana.
See, I keep hoping they would bring her back. That
I
would be
dislike creative. Romana so much.
Did you dislike both Romanas, or because we know Tom loved both of them?
Yeah, I just
yeah, but he married only one of them.
Yeah,
he only married one.
Yeah, no, but Romana didn't work for me for some reason. I don't know why. But I'm also one of the few people who actually is a fan of Adric.
I kind of cried. I cried a little when he died.
He blew himself up by not paying attention and getting the hell off when he could.
That's okay. I heard he became a villain in the novels.
Well, yeah, in one audio, he becomes like the king of the dinosaurs or something weird.
Oh, God.
Actually, one of the ones, Matthew Waterhouse couldn't stay out of the pub before acting.
But I liked the character. It was a decent character, I thought. So...
What about you?
Joe Grant.
What was the question?
Oh,
which companion would you like to bring back?
That would be interesting.
Out of all the years of...
I love Joe Grant. I always liked her more than Sarah Jane Smith. Mm-hmm. I like Sarah Jane Smith, too, but Joe Grant was just Joe Grant.
I would like
I did
to see
like
Jamie,
him.
Too.
I also liked Nyssa.
Yeah, I like Nyssa.
Nyssa would be awesome.
Nyssa and Adric. Finally get that out of the way.
Mm. There we go.
I'd like to bring back Catherine Tate. I like the way that
Donna.
I like the way that she interacted with the doctor, and how she wasn't afraid to get sassy with him. You could say, I guess.
She was.
Yeah,
she
that's what
one
I like.
My dream 50th joke is like Colin Baker, the Matt Smith, obviously because he has to be there. I do like Matt Smith, but this Donna, Tegan. I forget who else, but I just get the biggest, sassiest, most bickering, argumentable team that you could possibly get.
Most argumentative companions ever.
I mean, you just get Tegan and Donna in the same room as the Sixth Doctor, and you've got
can they
six
just,
hours of bickering.
Like, run into House then? Because that would complete the set.
House, like the
Doctor House.
Yeah. Hugh Laurie.
Yeah.
Missing
Doctor.
Actually, I'd like to see you, Laurie, do the doctor.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
Please?
We need another Curse of Fatal Death special.
Type special,
so we can,
yes.
Like, get a bunch of new... Because that would be one. I'd be like, oh, gotta be House.
And Laurie was a great comedian.
Benedict Cumberbatch. I'd like to see him, too. That would be kind of fun.
Cumberbatch, that'd be interesting.
That would be...
He should be the next generation of the monster.
Oh, well, yeah. Hmm. Okay, wait. I go with him.
No, have him be the Valyard.
Very likely John Hurt's the Valyard. Very likely.
He was credited as the doctor.
The words used were the only person.
He was the one that broke the promise.
How many other incarnations of the doctor have we seen?
Well,
that have called themselves anything other than the doctor.
I love the fact there are. I love the fact there are a couple of theories out, and one of them is that John Hurt is Paul McGann at the end of his cycle, before.
That could be interesting. I do like that one.
That's what I heard, because that would bump 10 to 11.
That would leave everything in its exact order,
right?
And make Eccleston the regeneration of the Time War.
Which would also explain the darkness that we saw in Eccleston,
mm-hmm.
and why he was suffering from so much post-traumatic stress. because apparently he had done something.
Yeah,
he not in the name of the
trying
doctor.
To deal with something that was
which
was
is lock everybody at the end of time.
No, he
but he was fine with killing everything. He almost died with Omega and the three doctors.
He commits genocide on a weekly basis, practically.
He almost sided with Omega when Omega was like, "I'm gonna kill all the Time Lords." And John Pertwee's like, "That sounds cool. Do you think you can do it? Because I don't think you can. So I better stop you."
The main reason I would intrigue that theory is that it's very BBC. Hey, look, we finally got to show the Eighth Doctor, and we got to screw over Paul McGann at the same time.
I look at Paul McGann's audios.
Yo, he's
pretty.
He'll say, "I'd love to come play back, go and play the Doctor again." All we have to do is ask.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here.
Yeah, see, I love Paul McGann's incarnation. I still say that the way they presented it in The Name of the Doctor, that the Valyard is still something that the Doctor becomes.
Yeah.
So the Valyard is something after Matt Smith.
So he's still around.
Your
12th
he escaped. Final incarnation.
Yep.
He escaped
the final incarnation and his 12th generation, which would put him after Matt Smith, but before his next body.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Entirely
possible.
No, because the regeneration limit has been officially lifted. It was lifted in 2010.
No, it was never lifted.
Yes, it was.
By whom?
By the producers. They said that they were
that
not going to.
That has never made any impact ever. Russell T. Davies, before he took over the show, once said that the Eighth Doctor didn't count. If we're taking it all
He said that he was counting that as Kanan. Because they specifically asked.
Before he revived the show, when he was talking
I still think
at a convention on a panel like this, he did say the Eighth Doctor didn't.
See, I just always assumed they'd be like, "Well, we just said it was 13 because that's the lifespan."
They've also said at one point that the Time Lords could restart the Master Cycle of Regeneration.
Also,
bear in mind
that River gave all of hers. So
exactly, that's another one.
So they
could not have given him her regeneration. She birthed them. If she could have given them, he could have given them back. And he didn't.
So they've established that a normal cycle of regenerations provides 13 incarnations. Mm. They've already established that. However, that doesn't mean that the Doctor has had a normal regeneration cycle.
Because the Time Lords have forced a bunch of them.
They've also determined that it is possible to have more than one cycle of regenerations because the Master's done it.
Mm-hmm.
He's had to do it by stealing bodies and such, but there are ways around it.
But she was using her regeneration power. She was body choosing.
That's never specified in the show.
No, but a lot of things haven't been specified yet. A lot of things haven't been specified. Some people have come up with a theory that, okay, all the Time Lords are locked at the end of time. He's getting everybody's.
I have not heard that one, and I don't like it.
Well, neither do I, some people have come up with
it. The explanation I would use.
I write semi-professionally on Doctor Who writing,
mm-hmm.
And I've written a decent amount about how they're going to handle this. I like to predict. Like, I predicted the name of the Doctor, how that was going to be used in the episode. So I like predicting these sort of
things. You did well, then.
Well, I knew they weren't going to reveal the name of the Doctor.
Oh,
so obviously. How are they going to
No,
that
would be too easy.
They're going to do in the name of the Doctor. So I went from there. Anyway, what I've thought about this is they have to address this limit in some way, shape, or form. They've been pushing it down the block, but if they don't address it, if they ignore it, fans will flip a shit. It's much easier to do one throwaway line. And the thing is, the show has introduced so much crap to extend regeneration cycles. You got Rassilon's stupid ring thing. You got the beds in Underworld.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Eye of Harmony, which works somehow. You got the X of Rassilon. Put them all on and jump into the Eye of Harmony. You get a million regenerations.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to address it in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
Okay.
At some point.
So it sounds like we've come around to the question of how do we think that the BBC is going to trot out giving the Doctor 14 and more regenerations.
I
think they'll just say he's the Doctor. Screw it.
I think the bigwigs will just be like, whatever. He's the Doctor. He can make it work.
But I want to readdress the whole River Song giving her more regenerations. He couldn't do that because at the time that she died, he had no clue who she was. And then when he did find out who she was, he couldn't screw up the timeline and give her more regenerations like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was a fixed...
And also remember, she's a hybrid.
Also a fixed point, personally.
Right. It was.
Well, I think they said it was a fixed point.
Yeah,
I couldn't remember that they actually specified that.
So
one.
She's kind of a hybrid. I mean, she's human with part
human.
Of the TARDIS.
She's a human time lord.
Yeah.
That's how I see her.
Well, similarly, okay, if we accept human time lord, whatever, the ability to give people regenerations to cure disease, if we accept that, in that case, Time Lord Society, cure all diseases, here's some of my regenerations. Well, oh, thanks for those. I'm cured of this disease. Can you give them back to me? Sure.
Yeah,
that's
but no.
And Time Lords did have medicine. They did have other things. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, okay, the thing is, Doctor Who canon doesn't often make sense.
No.
So I'd
no.
like to say that, but in my mind, that doesn't make sense for that exact reason.
Well, they've implied that sometimes regenerations go wrong.
Well, that's
going to bring up Morbius. They said they've had to go to and borrow
right.
For,
they
for life to fix it.
And remember that the regeneration to Tom Baker, the monk guy, had to help him finish his regeneration.
Yeah, he'd step in.
And that was a regeneration
right.
that had been forced to begin with by the Time Lord.
I never understood the Watcher.
All right, well, I have another...
Wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey.
Yeah.
I do have... I do have another question. Okay, so you know it's the joke is you hide behind the sofa, and because Doctor Who is scary. Like, as a young person with these rubber suits and whatnot, looking at it today, it's not so scary. Maybe it was a little bit more back then, maybe not. But what was the scariest moment of Doctor Who for you?
Horns of the Nymon. Oh my god, that was so
what?
Bad.
Really?
How bad it was.
And I'll even take it was just scary because it was awful.
Uniforms, please!
I will take it was just scary because it was just that awful.
Yeah.
Oh, look, the BBC got a bubble machine. Oh, it's so scary.
Graham Cowden almost got Fourth Doctor.
So, what was the scariest moment of Doctor Who for you?
Well, you see, I don't really get scared of anything physically. I get scared by psychological things. Probably one of the reasons why I actually took psychology as my major. It's the fact that the Master, when you really get into his manipulations, like Castrovalva, that can get very scary. Because there are people that actually think this way.
Well, Castrovalva actually was one of my first, like, really scary moments when the blood is on the first cliffhanger.
Yeah.
As a child, that freaked me out. I don't know why, but that scene has stuck with me.
So, Doc?
What about you, Doc?
See, I'm kind of with you in that I don't really think of a lot of the stuff in the shows as being scary. I mean, I saw where the story was going, but it was always cheesy enough that, you know, okay, I knew I was watching a story and I could enjoy the story, but I knew it wasn't real, so I didn't have to deal with fears of you know, Autons or axons coming out of my closet at night, and you know.
More about the older ones and the newer ones. Some of the new ones get just a little bit too close to reality.
Okay, yeah. One thing that did bother me: they introduced Davros. The sheer level of intensity of—it's just how very Nazi-like the character was portrayed. When I was a kid, I would catch the World War II specials they mm-hmm. used to put on. And everything about how Davros was portrayed, the fanaticism, the level of intelligence, how he, arrogant superiority, how he believed what he was doing, no matter how insane, was the right thing to do. And you gotta realize, there are actually scientists on our planet,
mm-hmm.
planet who think like this. And when that realization goes, I'm like, can we actually have people who are like Davros on our world?
But take that to the other side of that, where the Doctor goes, I gotta let the Daleks exist. Otherwise,
some things are better with the Daleks.
No.
Well, he said, touch these two and they're over. Have I got that?
Right.
Right, mm-hmm. Yes.
Which you'll see tomorrow night.
What about you, Caraman?
I'm going to go back to the Silence just because I have that connection to the Slenderman. And they look so much like him. They had no face, like no general face. The long extended fingers, the slender bodies in the suit. And so probably that's the closest thing I got, but it's not really that scary.
No, weeping angels freak me out.
You'll never look at a statue the same way again.
60 minutes of television, and I watched it alone at 1 a.m.
Which episode?
Blink.
Blink.
That one didn't bother me.
Visible through my window, on the balcony, of another resident. Yes, there was a freaking angel.
No, but I had that experience with the library one, where the doctor, it's like 1 a.m, and all the lights off, and the doctor's like, don't go in the shadows, and you're like, oh my gosh!
I still react to somebody warning me not to blink. But I also, as a kid, the scary one was Logopolis.
Mm.
That scared me so much that I had to rewatch it, and I don't exactly remember it.
What was it about a Logopolis that was scary for you?
Oh, that was
it was the little tiny doll man, combined with the idea of the master bringing about the big crunch, which it just got to me. I mean, it doesn't scare me now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
what, when I was whatever age I was when that first aired, and I watched it in Britain, I watched it in the original correct format. With cliffhangers in the week between.
Right. Half hour and 25 minute install.
25 minutes every week with the cliffhangers.
Episode 3 of Deadly Assassin. Does anyone think that Robert Holmes just did an interview with a bunch of kids? Like, what scares you the most? I need a filler story, and I just want to have it be 25 minutes of pure nightmares.
Nightmare fuel. That's who can be nightmare fuel.
A syringe the size of somebody's arm. There's a part where the doctor brushes off sands. There's a creepy clown
Okay, we have one other comment, and then we'll go back to the panelists.
It didn't actually scare me. It's just something funny. Right before I watched the most recent Angels episode, I said to my mom, how scary would it be if the Statue of Liberty was a weeping angel?
And he really did.
Nice.
And he really did.
Good
and
call.
Shortly, and then shortly thereafter, I went to New York City. And let me tell you, I was like, please avoid the Statue of Liberty.
And you didn't realize Moffat has your house bugged.
It was a little creepy. I was like,
I do remember something about one of the early Auton stories when they had the Autons as policemen.
Oh,
And they you know had them go out and have the policemen turn around with the blank faces and the hands fall open and start shooting people. And immediately the police came back to the BBC and say, never do that again. We've worked so hard to make kids feel that they can come up to us and tell us and trust us when things go wrong. And you have just dashed all that. Now they're running and screaming and hiding. Never do that again.
A lot of nurses also do that because of the ones coming out of the Vatican windows.
All right. Well, we are just about out of time. So... any closing remarks? We'll just go through.
No, I'm good. Doc?
It's one of the things I've always loved about Doctor Who is the fact that even though it was done up so cheaply and on the fly, is that there are such great stories in it. And I think we should all do what we can to promote those great stories and see them continue.
I don't know.
Try again.
I don't know. I've grown up with it, so I guess I wouldn't be the same without Doctor Who. Because sort of like, no matter how ridiculous you are, you can still be like this important person to someone.
For me, I like that this show, it can appeal to adults, and it has so many layers. Like we talked about the Daleks being very Nazi-like. I mean, they're ridiculous little pepper bots, and they sound crazy, but, I mean, you just love seeing them. But they are very crazy. You do think, I can't believe there are people in the world like this, especially Davros. But at the same time, it's something that kids can watch, and they can gain so much from. And I really just like that it just reaches out to such a wide age group, and that it can teach important lessons not only to children, but to adults. Mm-hmm. All right, well, thanks for coming.